This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The evening. They've kept us waiting. Trust me, we have been waiting all day for this announcement. We promised we would go live when the announcement came through. So here we are. We're all, as you may be able to tell, as some of us speak later on, some of us are feeling a little bit under the weather. It's not through popping a fusillade of champagne corks at the news of Ian Foster's appointment. It is that, you know, the climate that we're in. Some of us are struggling a little bit physically and some of us are under the weather. However, just 17 days have passed since Stephen Schumacher departed for Staffordshire, but after an extensive search yielding over 100 applicants, the interregnum and period of sede vacante is over. The white smoke is currently billowing out metaphorically from above Home Park, and the bells of St Mary and St Boniface's Cathedral are tolling. As Schumacher's successor has been chosen in the form of Ian Foster. The 47-year-old from, yes, you guessed it, Merseyside, joins Argyle as our new head coach. Having spent most of his playing career in the lower leagues, Foster spent 3 years at the start of his managerial career in Ireland at Galway United and Dundalk before returning this side of the Irish Sea to further his coaching career. A spell at Coventry was swiftly followed by joining forces with Paul Cook at Portsmouth, where alongside Liam Richardson, the trio formed that famous rivalry with Argyle as we went toe-to-toe for a number of seasons. Then in 2017, after helping Pompey get out of League Two, the FA came calling, thus enhancing Foster's reputation as a promising coach. Appointed to work alongside Steve Cooper and Mike Marsh, the under-17s embarked on its most successful period, winning their respective World Cup whilst also being runners-up and semi-finalists in successive Euros. Foster then continued to climb the ranks at the FA, progressing through the levels and boasting impressive numbers in the process. In the middle of this period at the FA, he was also appointed as assistant coach to Phil Neville with the England Lionesses. After leading England at the under-20s, or for the under-20s in the 2023 World Cup in June last summer, where the side were knocked out in the round of 16 by Italy, Foster left the FA to join England legend Steven Gerrard as his assistant in the slightly warmer climates of Saudi Arabia at Al Ettifaq. And that now brings us to the present day, and Foster is now a Janna as the head coach of the Green Army. I am delighted that it's not quite their bedtime for John Allsop, Sam Down and Ben, who have joined us at this very late hour to discuss Fozzie's appointment. Sam is in the building. John, why don't you kick us off? Ian Foster is our new man. Initial thoughts?
My initial thought is I didn't realise that you lived in Aaron's house.
He's let me stay over for the weekend.
Okay, good. For those who weren't on our previous space about Stephen Schumacher, I actually thought that that was Aaron's house, not just a stock backdrop for about 5 minutes, which does not reflect very well on me or my judgment. So with that in mind...
They don't have houses like that in Norwich, John. Go on. Get real. That's
harsh on the people of Norwich. But yes, I think I'm excited. I don't think I'm sort of completely... you know, overwhelmed and over the moon with it. But I'm also not anywhere near as negative as a lot of the people who seem to be talking about this loudly on social media. You know, as is always the case with these sorts of appointments, when someone steps into what is, you know, no disrespect to the League of Ireland 10 or so years ago, essentially his first job in club management, certainly at this kind of level, you know, it's always a bit of a crapshoot, right? Like, you could be getting the next Kieran McKenna, or you could be getting the next insert example here of someone who managed for six games, got fired.
For some context, Foster managed in the League of Ireland in 2009 and 2011. Thus, if you do the quick maths, you can work out that was 13 years ago. He was very early on in his coaching career. Right. So those who are judging him on that alone probably just need to look at the facts a little bit, don't they?
So all that time I was trying to think of a banter manager who's come from being a coach and then disappeared into obscurity after a terrible run. Does Matthew Etherington count, maybe? I mean, he's had a couple of jobs, but he has just been fired from Colchester, so I don't know. But yes, so the point is, of course, you know, it can go either way. Or they could just be fine, not pull up trees, but also not be terrible. It's the full gamut of potential outcomes are available. And obviously that would also be the case if we'd hired someone more established. I think there are certain managers who you pretty much know what you're going to get, but they're very few and far between. I mean, obviously someone like Neil Warnock or Tony Mowbray has been, you know, around the block so many times and has done such a similar job at most clubs that they've been to that, you know, you're probably looking at that being something that would happen again, more likely than not. But even someone like John Eustace, who I think a lot of our fans seem to want instead of Foster, obviously did a very good job at Birmingham, but he's only really done that Birmingham job at this level. So it's difficult to know even if he would have come in and been able to replicate that kind of form. It's quite possible something about the circumstances at Birmingham versus the circumstances here might have made it, you know, a very different proposition. So, yeah, it is a completely blank slate, and therefore it is a risk. There's no question about that. I also think, though, that this is, which I guess kind of contrary-wise to saying it's a big risk, although both things can be true at once, I think it's probably the closest to a continuity appointment that we were able to do without literally appointing someone from in-house, which obviously this time, after we did that with Shuey last time, was not possible because the coaches
were not left. We had no coaching staff left to do it this time, so...
Exactly, much like Tally Ho on an average away game, we had no functioning coaches. So, So obviously, yeah, Hughes went, a couple of other coaches went as well. So that wasn't that model wasn't going to happen again this time. So obviously, it's not an internal appointment. When I say continuity, it is clearly someone who is going to be very well known to Neil Jusnip. Obviously, he worked, as we know, within the England sort of football setup as did Foster for a number of years. He's someone who, you know, clearly is being brought in very explicitly to play football in the same way as we have been playing Schumacher. And obviously, as we said, you know, maybe trying to console ourselves a little bit, but very truthfully, after Schumacher left, he's coming into a club that has a very you know, rigid system in place with a director of football and with, you know, a very firm kind of mission oriented, style oriented roadmap of where we want to go. He's not coming in and being told, you know, the football club is your sort of fiefdom to run as you wish. So, you know, with that in mind, and the fact he knows Jusnip so well, I think he's coming into a fairly sort of circumscribed role in many respects. And, you know, you have to think that, given the club have got that kind of appointment right in the past to slot into that plan, that there's a good chance they've got it right this time as well. I mean, their track record to this point has been very good. So yeah, it's obviously a risk because there isn't really any proof of concept to go on. But I also think that I trust the club to have got it right. And yeah, and the fact that obviously he does know Jusnip sort of makes it not like a total plunge into the dark. I think we can know roughly what we can expect football-wise. Obviously, how successful it's going to be is the bit that's the risk and that we don't know yet.
I'm going to give the public a little bit longer to wait for what they want, which is quite clearly, looking at the comments coming in, a bit of Sam Down analysis. So we'll keep them waiting. We'll keep them watching to boost the numbers. Ben, I mean, even in the last 48 hours, every man, his cat and his dog seems to have been linked with the role. We've had names flying at us left, right and centre, some believable, some left field and some downright outrageous names. Is some people's, I don't know, hostility isn't the word, but is some people's trepidation about this appointment perhaps because of the list of names that the bookmakers threw out at a very early stage, that people were so hung up on, oh, those are the people that we're going to be getting, it's going to be one of them because the bookmakers have got odds for them, and that now that the club have gone through their due diligence and found the man that they believe is the right one to take us forward, is that where people's perhaps perceived negativity is coming from?
I think possibly. I think that a lot of the names that were maybe linked initially weren't ever going to be realistic, but they put an idea in people's heads. You sort of, you know, if you're talking about people like Gus Poyet and, established what we call, you know, championship managers which are known to be a safe pair of hands in the championship, they're not really the sort of targets Argyle can afford. You know, even like Nigel Pearson, I put this out at the time when people were floating names around in the early days. Nigel Pearson was on 27 grand a week at Bristol City then. And, you know, we don't even pay our players half of that, any of them. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the manager couldn't earn more than the player potentially if they're the right person. But it's just not, you know, it's setting unrealistic expectations. I don't know if people maybe would have seen any of the names on the list and fallen in love. But it does set a particular bar for what maybe expectations were among some people. And I said it on the last pod. Well, it was Twitter Spaces, but it's obviously available as a pod now. The idea of a safe pair of championship hands isn't necessarily what Argyle need, because we don't have a championship squad and a championship wage bill, which is what those sort of managers perform with. You know, those guys do their job. With those assets in place, and without that, there's no guarantee they'd do it with what Argyle have. Much in the same way that Scott Parker was complaining about the quality of his squad when he got to the Premier League and saying, "Look, I can do a job, but I can't do it with the assets that I have." Although, you know, Gary O'Neill went on to keep that squad up. So, but a lot of championship managers might come to Argyle, not get the result, and say, "Well, look, what do you expect me to do with the resources that I have?" So, I don't actually think that. I think that this is the best move, not necessarily the person, but someone of that calibre, someone who obviously does have a low floor, as John said, you know, other than the League of Ireland, you know, even if you could do consider that his first, you know, serious club appointment, he's done a lot of developing and growing since. So it's his first sort of, you know, a shot at a club management in a long time. That's, you know, he's got a low floor. He might absolutely, you know, mess it up, but then anybody might, you know, there's so many variables and intangibles involved in a manager coming in. But on the flip side of that, as has been said, it keeps the continuity of the club's working structure in place. And, you know, the fact that he's worked with Jusnet before, people will maybe suggest that's, you know, jobs for the boys, nepotistic sort of appointment. But if you've got to think about it the other way, how long do you want, you know, we've been without a manager now for what, 4 games, over 2 weeks now. How long do you want to bed in a relationship between a manager and a director of football and your recruitment team before we get moving? So in a sense, I can understand why people are sort of, I don't believe in the sort of conspiracy that it's, you know, a Scouse revolution and jobs for the boys, but I can understand why people were being, you know, suspicious. But I don't, you know, on the flip side, it makes sense to appoint someone you're familiar with, even though they didn't sort of necessarily overlap in a great deal in their working lives. But it's, you know, it's the sort of appointment that the club needed to make. So with a low floor, yes, but with a potentially very high ceiling. And that's the, and if you look at clubs that have set this precedent, this pattern in play and been successful with it, they don't necessarily go out and get the expensive big names once they get to the big leagues. You know, you look at Brighton, you know, they still go out and get managers who, yes, are successful, but the key to their continued success as a club is that they're identifying managers that that believe in and invest in the same traits that are already in the club. So the manager comes in and doesn't have to go out and spend 100 million in the transfer market to get players for his style. They can use the players they've got, adapt it slightly, but the players that have been brought in have the skills and the mentality appropriate to adapt to the new manager's skills. And that's what, you know, the club is doing here. They've clearly identified that Foster is going to be able to use the foundation that's been laid by the team before him. Or by the club before him. And that's going to be the most important thing, I think, in getting results going, getting the season turned around, not turned around, but back on track. That's the euphemism, not the euphemism, the idiom I'm looking for. So, yeah, I think that people may be...
Although we're past 9 p.m., we don't want any euphemisms. It is a family show this evening.
But, yeah, I think people would want... a lot of people want a big name, but when you look at the logic of that, I don't think that any of the names that we would attract would be enough to do anything other than keep us in the league. We want to be able to, you know, Simon Hallett's got a 5-year plan. And if it's not this man, it will be the next. But the idea is to keep building. Even if you end up taking one step back, to take two steps forward at times, the idea is to make constant progress. And you set yourself a ceiling when you bring in a name that has proven what their ceiling is. If their ceiling is, you know, championship survival, then... that's all we're going to... Hey, hater, less of that. If you want to just stay in the championship, then appoint someone who's good at keeping you in the championship. But if you want to risk, if you want to take a risk at trying to get higher up the league, the top half of the table, even thinking about promotion with financial building, then you know that you need someone who has the, yes, low floor, but the high potential, the high ceiling.
Just to quickly pick up on something Ben said that I think is an important point. Like, I saw a lot of people clamoring after Scott Parker on social media. And like, yeah, sure, on paper, Scott Parker has got two teams promoted out of the championship. But also, those two teams had massive expectations, massive budgets, and incredibly good playing squads. And to my mind, did not look at all convincing in going up on either of those occasions. I think Fulham went up through the playoffs in the COVID season, if I remember correctly. And then... that Bournemouth team finished second, so fair play. I mean, obviously, it's not a bad job because you met the criteria, but then that Fulham team went down very poorly from the Premier League, very, very poorly. I think, actually, this is a rant I have to Sam quite often, people remember that Fulham team as having put in like a scrappy 18th place, nearly stayed up finish, but I think they finished 11 or 12 points behind Burnley. It was just that the entire bottom three that year was terrible, and in quite a lot of years, that Fulham team would have finished bottom. And then he flounced out of Bournemouth or was sacked, or I don't know which version of it you want to believe, but it was very clear there was, you know, a huge... row over recruitment and budget, and he basically came out and publicly said, "Yeah, I need more money, or we're going down." And the club stayed up. So, you know, they got rid of him and they got a new manager, and who incidentally also had no top level managerial experience, and they stayed up against all expectations. So, like, yeah, that guy does not smack me as someone who is a good manager. Firstly, and then you throw his disastrous spell at Club Bruges into the mix if you want as well, to as further proof of that, but you know, more to the point, is not someone who has ever proven that he can, you know, outperform budget to a significant degree, and that is what we need. So I would much rather take a jump into the dark, albeit one guided by existing relationships, than someone who is a bigger name who has a flashy CV, but actually when you dig into that CV, it doesn't really bear scrutiny once you get past the kind of first layer of paint.
Yeah, I think we've probably kept all our viewers waiting long enough for the content that they're all hanging on for. Sam Down. There's George's comment. Bring on Sam Down. Give the people what they want. So let's do that. Sam, without trying to drop you in it a little bit, but I'm going to, I think it's fair to say that over the last 24 hours since Ian Foster has taken a plunge in the betting, and it's looked likely to be Ian Foster, it's probably safe to say you've gone through a whole range of emotions about this appointment. Where do we stand here and now in the world of Sam Down about Ian Foster as the Plymouth Argyle head coach?
Thank you very much to that intro, Joe. And thank you to everybody for your fantastic comments. I've never felt so sought after in all my life. Thank you, Michael. I'm not a giant.
Show, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. I'm not a giant. I'm just standing up in a room with no chairs. I don't have a desk in my room. So, and I can't go downstairs because my housemates are eating dinner, watching this stream, funnily enough. So I'm having to stand up on a tilted back laptop screen just to clear that one up. Like Stephen Schumacher's love for Argyle, it is an optical illusion. John completely ruined my punchline there. Completely ruined my punchline. Thank you, John. The punchline was much like Stephen Schumacher's love for Argyle, it's an optical illusion. There we go. Anyway, Ian Foster, blimey. For a name that, well, first of all, I want to say congratulations to the club on keeping it so quiet in an era where everything gets leaked out pretty much, from team sheets to loan recalls to the kit. They've done very well to keep this quiet. I think Ian Foster, I hadn't even heard his name mentioned at all anywhere in public for the job up to about 4 days ago, maybe. And he wasn't considered to be among one of the front runners until yesterday morning. So thank you for that, Argyle hater. So, yeah, I think they did very well keeping it quiet. As for my thoughts on the appointment, I want to say, first of all, to kind of solidify something that John and Ben have already alluded to, which is that, and I want to kind of not necessarily repeat what they've said, but formulate what they've said into more of an overall thesis, which is that we don't want someone who's just going to do a decent job, quite frankly. And I know that sounds a bit provocative, but doing a decent job for Argyle, whereby you perform about to budget, or maybe even slightly above budget, is a relegation season for us, because we have the smallest or second smallest budget in the league. So we need somebody who's not just going to do about par, not even just going to do slightly better than par. We need someone to do, as Schumacher has done, quite bluntly, a lot better than par. That's what we need. And if we can get someone to do even better still than Schumacher, then we're really laughing. So I absolutely get why they've gone for an appointment in the mould of Ian Foster, 100%. Rather than going for someone like Nigel Pearson, even Tony Mowbray. And I can see the good points for Tony Mowbray, because his teams play good football, and he's good with youth, both of which tick our boxes. However, I can see why they've gone for someone in the mould of Ian Foster, 100%. That being said, and this is where I'm going to be a little bit more critical than John and Ben perhaps have, I still can't quite get past the fact that we've had a large triple figure applicant list. We've done all this extensive interview process of informal interviews, followed by formal interviews, shortlist, longlist, etc. And we've settled on someone from Liverpool who's previously worked with Neil Deepslip. And I know that sounds a bit controversial to say, and I know that Ben's given a very good argument why he thinks it isn't a Jobs for the Boys or a Stitch Up or any of that kind of thing. And I'm not quite sure I'd necessarily use those provocative terms, but it does feel to me like, thank you again for that PFC report. It does again feel to me like we've gone for somebody who Deepslip is confident he can manage, rather than somebody who he is confident will manage the team brilliantly. And that's not to say Deepslip is some kind of crazy, power-hungry dictator who devours power above all else, because, you know, I think some of that rhetoric has been getting a bit excessive over the last 72 hours on Twitter. And I think that rhetoric does need calming down a little bit. But that's not to say that it has no basis whatsoever. There are rumours, you know, leaking out, as they always do, that Schumacher and Deepslip relations weren't the best towards the end. And I'm very, very cautious of a cautionary tale of the last person employed by Plymouth Argyle who was given the title head of football, who had total responsibility for managing all aspects of the club and wasn't really reined in. And that was Derek Adams. That was a manager who was doing an absolutely fantastic job up to his final season, where it all went very toxic and it all went very wrong. Is there a possibility I'm being too negative and I'm kind of assuming it's going to go the same way? Maybe that's so. Maybe it could go another way. Maybe Deepslip is completely good enough. He'll walk the walk as well and talk the talk. And maybe Foster is actually a lot more his own man than I'm giving him credit for. All of those things are possible, and I really hope that it gets. But I still can't quite shake the feeling that this is possibly a little bit of a yes man hire. If he does a fantastic job, and if he proves me wrong, and we're comfortably ensconced in mid-table by May, then I'll be the first to come on and say I'm totally wrong and he's a fantastic choice. Give him all the credit he's due, and give Deepslip all the credit he's due for appointing him.
You won't be the first. Also, and we'll tell you you're wrong much before you.
Yeah, well, that's very true. That's very true. But I will gladly agree with them. Let's put it that way. I'm a little cautious that it's a not a safe hire, because it's very much not a safe hire in terms of his CV. I very much go out to contrary, it's a safe hire in terms of personnel, that he's gone for somebody who won't rock the boat too much. Looking at his recent record, it's very hard to judge, because an assistant manager ultimately is one part of a cog, and the buck does stop with the manager. So I'm trying not to be too worried about the fact that his team in the Saudi Pro League haven't won for 2 months. I'm trying not to be too worried about the fact that Phil Neville was a pretty bad manager of the England women's team and Foster was assistant to him. So I'm trying not to be too worried about either of those things, because whilst the last two jobs he's had as an assistant manager were not great, I also think that we don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes, and it's quite hard to dig out any individual cog, because the buck does stop at the manager. But it's also possibly a little bit of a cause for minor concern. Look, before that, League of Ireland, he did pretty well in the League of Ireland. I did read a tweet initially saying that he didn't do well in the League of Ireland, but I, having actually researched his record, but he did pretty well, certainly in his first job at Galway, and in his second job as well, I think he did okay. So he did pretty well in the League of Ireland, but hey, it's 12 years ago, it's a semi-pro league. Alfie Lewis plays in that league. Let's not judge too much into that. so, yeah.
Doesn't he play in the conference or Conference South?
No, Southend were going to sign him, but they're still under an embargo, I think, or they're only just coming out of an embargo, so that's all a bit up in the air.
I thought that was done. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologise for
I think it's no. I think it was reported by Southend Press as being nearly done, but it's not actually done. Anyway, that's a complete tangent. Going back to Ian Foster, look, I will give him full vocal support on the pitch. Obviously, from the stands to him and his team on the pitch. Needless to say, I would be lying though if I felt I would come on here and give a totally positive analysis. Because ultimately, you guys tune in because you like to hear our opinions. Goodness knows why. But I have to give my honest feeling. And my honest feeling is not the most positive one in the world about this. My feeling is this has a little bit of a shades of somebody of a hire who is malleable. It has a little bit of a shade of a big risk as well. And look, it may well be that Ian Foster is the guy with an incredibly high ceiling and low floor. But I also think there was another guy who, by all accounts, got very far into the process, who has a high ceiling and a relatively high floor. And that's John Eustace. And I think with that, you have to look at the fact that his Birmingham side were tipped by all and sundry to go down last season. He got them 17th, which is where Argyle are now, or just about. So he very much has a proven record of getting a team to massively overperform expectations with a similar squad strength to Argyle. And then when they actually invested this season, before they were stupid enough to sack him for Wayne Rooney, he had them sixth in the league. So I think, thank you, Dane, feedback duly noted. I think that Eustace would have had a higher ceiling and also a higher floor. There are other managers who I think would also have had a very high ceiling without the slight taint of, are they just a bit of a job for the boys hire? Are they being hired because they're a mate of Neil Dewslip? No, Tim, it doesn't hurt to be positive, and I really am trying to be, but I feel that I have to express my honest doubts on this. I really, really hope I'm wrong. I really hope he absolutely smashes it. And I'm not saying he won't. Look, this is not as if we'd appointed somebody like, you know, Carl Robinson or, you know, who else can I think of who'd be a dreadful appointment? Dean Holden, for example. If it was somebody like that, I'd be much more staunch in my negativity than what I am now. I think this is an appointment that has some question marks, but I will also very much agree it is an appointment that has a very high ceiling. And look, I really, really hope that high ceiling is reached, and irrespective of the outcome, good, bad or indifferent, I'll be cheering the team on from the stand. I'll be singing Ian Foster's Green and White Army in the full hope that he does a great job.
Well, I guess if Sam's view is it's jobs for the boys, and Ben's view is it's not jobs for the boys, my middle ground would be, if it is, who cares? Like, jobs for the boys sounds bad. It sounds like, you know, procurement fraud and nepotism and laziness and all the rest of it. But like, another way of framing that is we've gone through 100 applications and basically they've concluded that having someone who already knows him, who already can come in on day one at this very disturbed time, at this very, you know, sort of tumultuous time in the season, it's someone you can slot in quickly who already knows he's going to be on the same wavelength as the director of football under whom he's going to have to work very closely and who knows the style that he's expected to play. Like, is that jobs for the boys in one way of putting it? Yes, arguably it is. But like, at the same time, you know, a different way of putting it is, it's essentially a continuity hire without being an internal one. And if they have concluded, and by the way, it's not just Juznip who sits on that panel, right? Like, Hallett and the board representative and Parkinson are not there to rubber stamp Neil Juznip's mates getting the job. So obviously this guy has done an interview that has convinced, you know, the owner, the chairman of the club, and other representatives of the club, in addition to the director of football, that he is the right person for the job in a field where, you know, I think we pretty much know there were some extremely compelling candidates based on some of the reporting that has come out, including seemingly John Eustace very far into the process. And so, you know, I think there's just different ways of looking at that kind of prior sort of incestuousness, if you like, between Juznip and Foster. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. And I think ultimately they're going to be judged on results, right? If the results are good, then it's going to look like this was a genius hire of someone who wasn't an obvious candidate and wasn't everyone's first choice and wasn't the name on all the lips, but someone who we've once again kind of pulled out of relative obscurity. Obviously within the game, he's someone who's very well respected, but, you know, sort of in terms of frontline management, relative obscurity. And if it goes badly, the narrative will be it was jobs for the boys and he was incompetent. And I think at this point in time, we just don't have the knowledge to assess which of those framings is more accurate. And to be completely honest, it could go really badly and still not have been a jobs for the boys hire, but just one that didn't just happen to not work out for whatever reason. So I just don't know why this idea of him having a prior connection with the director of football is being perceived by so many fans. And I'm actually not saying that Sam has an undiluted negative view of it. I think his view is very nuanced, but, you know, there are people out there who do have a quite unnuanced view of it, I would say. And I just don't understand why this is meant to be an unalloyed, definitely bad thing. Like, you know, if we hadn't had success for the last year and a half, if we were in the lower end of League One and this kind of playbook was getting repeated time and time again, then I would have more concerns with it. But currently we are on a rocket of an upward trajectory based on a hiring strategy that this has now played into and looks very similar.
Do we think that he would have done a
quote unquote yeah man or quote unquote jobs for the boys hire, if by that you mean somebody who's going to come in and have a constructive working relationship that isn't start scratch? Like, you could bring in Mourinho or Pep or Klopp, and if they had a massive falling out with Juznip on day two, then it could lead to, you know, a toxic atmosphere at the club. It could undo some of the progress and some of the kind of cohesiveness that we've got. Obviously, I would have liked to have hired either of those managers if they were available, but it's not, you know, it is a system at the club. It is a well-oiled machine. People were not just saying that because it was a way of kind of softening the blow of Shuey's departure. And you have to, when you are fixing any machine, you know, you have to find the right cog. And if the machine is running very smoothly, you want a cog that looks very similar to the one that you had before. If that cog decided to go and join Cog City FC, the biggest club in the Cog World Championship, with their huge cog facilities.
Ben, very quickly, you had something to say before we move on.
People keep saying, well, Schumacher got the job. That's fine because he was the assistant, so he knew the club inside out. But it very much helped that he knew Juznip too. You know, there was an established relationship there before that might well have fed into Lowe getting the job, etc. And all of the... So that worked out pretty successfully. Like John says, you need, you know, people know each other in football. There's no... You know, you might know John Eustace for all I know from different places. And, you know, if you've been around the game a while, you know people. And at the end of the day, like, if it doesn't work out, who's going to be under fire as well? Who's been the public face of this whole process? It's been Neil Juznip. So it's not like he's like some kind of American football franchise owner who can just reign with an iron fist and is untouchable. He is also accountable and answerable for the way things go. You know, and, you know, we've heaped loads of praise on Stephen Schumacher for results and things, and a little on Neil Juznip. And then all of a sudden we're going to want to, you know, throw shade on Neil Juznip if things go wrong. It's like, you know, he's should bear some of the praise for the way things have gone over the past couple of years. And he's also aware that he's going to face the music if if he appoints someone who, you know, like, he's a very savvy man. He knows what it looks like. He appointed someone he's worked with previously. He knows what the narrative is potentially going to be, the negative sort of take on that. So he knows what the risk is. He's not going to be doing it stupidly just to give his mate a job. You know, he must genuinely believe there's potential here for it to be successful. It's not like he's going to get away scot-free if it's an unmitigated disaster. So I don't think, you know, you can sort of say, oh, he's just given the job to his mate, because if he didn't genuinely believe he was going to do a good job, he'd also, you know, risk being out of a job.
Let's hear from some of the people who were involved in the process. It should just be mentioned that Argo have just put out a interview on Argo TV with Ian Foster. Unfortunately, we don't have any quotes from Foster to bring to you here, but obviously don't leave yet. Wait till the end of this stream, go and watch.
I imagine that he loves he thinks this is a massive club with huge potential, and it was just too big an opportunity to turn down.
I would have thought it's something along those lines.
Role of a lifetime that every young Liverpudlian dreams of, being assistant manager in the Saudi Pro League. Yes,
I do exactly. Like how we're the only club in Europe, I think, paying money to the Saudis to take their assets over to England rather than the other way around. I think there's a fantastic irony to that. But that's one thing that's made me smile about the appointment.
We'll come on to that in a second. Let's hear from three of the men involved in the process. It was confirmed by Neil Jusnip today that there was a four-person team involved in the interview process. Chairman Simon Hallett, Chief Executive Andrew Parkinson, Director of Football Neil Jusnip, and Argo Board Director Jane Schaefer was involved in the process. Simon Hallett, as per Argyle's statement, went on to say, "I'm thrilled to welcome a coach of Ian's calibre to Plymouth Argyle as our new head coach. He was the perfect candidate to lead our great football club as we embark on our next five-year plan. Ian showed a passion and knowledge for the club throughout the interview process and showcased in some detail how he sees the best way to take our exciting and dynamic young squad forward. Having worked with some of the best players in this country has produced, he has a passion for developing young footballers as well as playing an expansive attacking football, which fits perfectly with how we want the club to progress. I'm excited to see how he takes the team forward and very much welcome him to Plymouth Argyle." The aforementioned Neil Jusnip, who's been much talked about, of course, over the last fortnight, and I think we should also, you know, we shouldn't take away from the incredible work that both he, Kevin Nanskerville, and Reese Wilmot have put in over the last 16, 17 days to keep the show on the road. And let's be fair, there's every real possibility we'd be sat here with four wins from those four games had certain things panned out differently in those four games. He goes on to say, "I have spoke openly in the past few weeks about how we would wait for the right person for the job. And in Ian, we believe we have found exactly that. He has an incredible pedigree as a coach and working with young players, and we feel he is the perfect person to take forward this incredible group of players we have." A lot of incredibles there from Neil. "Now is the time to look to the future, and I am excited to see Ian get to work on the training pitch immediately." I didn't realise we were holding a 9 p.m. training session tonight, but good luck to him. "And to help us achieve our aims both this season and beyond." And last but not least, Andrew Parkinson went on to say, it was important when going through the recruitment process that the successful person showed the key qualities required to be the head coach of Plymouth Argyle. The interest in this role was incredible, with applicants from all over the world. And in Ian, we feel that we have found the perfect person to lead forward and continue the success we have seen over the past 4 years. It does go on to mention that first team coach Kevin Nanskerville will form a part of Foster's coaching staff. I'm not sure that was ever really up for debate. And further announcements will be made in due course regarding the full makeup of Foster's coaching team. So to go on to your comments that have been coming in, feel free to throw them in, even if it is just pointing shade at Sam's stance and his incredibly high ceiling, even if it may not be as big as Ian Foster's in his coaching career. Let's get on to a few of your comments. First one from Trippy says, "Do you think he'll be in the dugout tomorrow?" I think given the lateness of this announcement, I think it's probably fair to say that he won't. I think it was confirmed today, wasn't it, by Jusnip, but it's likely to be him and Nanskerville for one last dance, a la Neil Warnock style. Darren Drew asks, "Who will be his assistant?" Unfortunately, Darren, I'm not sure that we have a clue who Ian Foster is close to in the coaching world. Stephen Gerrard, yeah. Well, he may well come up in up for availability very soon if his form in the Saudi Pro League continues.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Lee Battle says, interested in the loan signings he will bring in if they haven't already been decided. He's got a lot of work to do quickly. That's an interesting point, Sam. I'll bring you in because the public want you in. Although if you could keep this answer shorter than 20 minutes, that would be great. It's an interesting point, though, isn't it? Because with his links to the England setup, and I know we've made a lot of this about Juzinip and his contacts in the game, but when it comes around to the fact that our January business is likely to be loans, and we're going to touch on the Finazaz news in a short while, and obviously there's the potential for the speculation about Luke Kundal going back as well. There's a lot of loan vouchers that Ian Foster has available to redeem at the moment, isn't there? And could his extensive contacts in the game and in the England setup help that towards our recruitment window?
Well, I promise the answer won't be as long as the question, Joe. I would say they can't hurt. They can't hurt for sure. What I would say is that it's surely Juicelip is going to do most of the recruitment, and that's not in a way of Juicelip's controlling everything, blah, 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 because, you know what, that's what a director of football does do. The head coach does the coaching and the director of football does the recruiting. Obviously, it's more complex than that, but that's what it boils down to at the end of the day. So I think Juicelip will do most of the recruiting. And let's be honest, Juicelip has a whole load of contacts within the FA anyway, foremost being Ian Foster, who is the supporting manager. So I think we probably already had all the FA contacts we needed. And let's be honest, contacts in the FA are only so much good because really you're going to need to negotiate with the parent club. So, look, it can't hurt, but I wouldn't overblow that factor too much. I think it's probably not a decisive one, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell on that. Dan Underwood asks, is he any good at set pieces? Time will tell on that. But Ben, not wishing to put too much pressure.
He's 47, so probably not a championship level.
And he is only, what, 5'11", is it? I think is Wikipedia.
Oh, he's much shorter than that. He's 5'6", actually.
Oh, 5'6". Oh, crikey. Well, we wouldn't want him marking the goalkeeper as the ball comes into the bar. But
he doesn't need a high ceiling.
Without trying to put too much pressure on what's likely to be his first game in charge at Huddersfield next weekend, will it calm everyone down if we go away to Huddersfield and his first game in charge is a win? It's our first win on the road. Would that help calm everyone down about Foster's ability, or is it going to take more than just one result for a lot of people who are perhaps knee-jerking to just settle down on this appointment?
Well, yeah, I mean, we are a very reactionary fan base, but like you could see yesterday as an absolute head loss about who's this guy. We've had 100 applicants, but then a lot of people who lost their heads, you know, I tried reasoning with a couple. And they're like, look, I just want to be emotional. Okay. And it's sort of like, you know, they just wanted to process their sort of, you know, worry and doubt, because we sort of have this sort of, you call it like a institutionalized sort of trauma as Argyle fans that nothing nice lasts for very long, and it's sort of hereditary.
We're gonna come on to that in a minute.
Okay. But like so I think, you know, you see a lot of reaction today is like, a lot of people on Twitter, which is probably the most toxic of the social media platforms, saying, I lost my head yesterday, but I'm feeling a bit better about it today. So I think, you know, a win would help, but I think a lot of people have calmed down and realized, look, this is what we've got now, getting used to the reality of it. Even if they're not too keen on it like Sam, they'll get behind the manager because that's what we do here. And and we'll go for it. Now, if we do get a win, it's quite ironic because it looks the way Dewsnip's team has been set up and playing. I mean, I think the Watford game, some of that football was possibly some of the best we'd seen all season. Obviously, you know, there's the elephant in the room that we're not going to have the same team on the pitch. But it looked, you know, if you'd have said, yeah, we've got a chance of going away to Huddersfield and getting the win, I don't necessarily know if, you know, I would, for example, if we've convened after a win away at Huddersfield, I'd be saying, well, look, we were looking pretty good before we went away to Huddersfield. I wouldn't put that all down to Foster's influence all of a sudden. You know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. So, yeah, I mean, yes, it will help for sure if we go away and get that result, but that could have been coming anyway. You know, we know we're pretty good going forward. And we only need a couple of good performances at the back, some good communication, and we might do a little keep less than three goals, let less than three goals in rather, and then we got a chance of winning. But you know, it's like I said on the last pod about, you know, and you've mentioned it already, we could have got somewhere between 9 and 12 points out of the last four games, and if we had, would we all be saying, oh, let's give it to Nils Dewsnip and, you know, he needs to take over? Would the narrative be different? Results do make, as you're suggesting, quite an impact on people's perceptions. So I do think that, you know, a win away at Huddersfield would definitely buy him some grace for the doubters. But I don't think it's, you know, necessarily, no one's going to, if people want to hold a negative opinion, they'll hold that negative opinion despite whatever logical reason or facts you put in front of them. And if people want to be sort of credulous and optimistic, then also the same. So I think for everybody who uses, you know, who tries to make decisions or make opinions based on what they see, you're not going to just say, oh, yep, he's won our first away game in his first game in charge. He's the, you know, the Messiah, and he's here to take us up. And you're also not going to say, if we go away to Huddersfield and lose abysmally, oh, you know, what's he doing? He's got nothing. He's got no idea. So, I take your point, and results do have a big impact on perceptions. But I think people with extreme views who are determined to hold them will hold them regardless. The rest of us will, you know, we'll give him 5-10 games before we start drawing any distinct conclusions, I think.
If I can just jump in on that one, sorry, just very quickly. I think whilst it won't make or break Foster Zero either way, I think a win at Huddersfield would just be the most enormous thing, just for lifting this sense of dismay that's sunk in around the club. And I don't just mean dismay from people not happy with the appointment. I mean dismay at Shuey leaving, coupled with dismay at Azaz being recalled, coupled with dismay at the rumours of Cundall potentially being recalled. It would just be an emotional pressure valve being released. I think we've not won away all season in this league for about 14 years. We've not won at a 3 p.m. away from home Saturday since October 2022. I know that stat's a bit of a freak because we've had so many wins on Tuesdays and bank holidays, but hey, go with it. I just think if we win at Huddersfield, and it would not only for a win in Foster's first game, but let's not forget the first win since Schumacher left. Okay, we will probably beat Sutton tomorrow if this is going out after and we've lost 1-0. By all means, laugh and clip it up and share it around. But okay, we'll probably beat Sutton tomorrow. But for a win in Foster's first proper game would just be so good for releasing the pressure, because hey, if you go three games without a win, four games without a win, five games without a win, that pressure does build up, rightly or wrongly. If he can get that win in his first game, it would... Yes, Aaron, I know it's live, but some people will be watching it after the fact. Thank you for that. Some people will... I've lost track of what I was saying, Aaron. Thank you. Some people will obviously have that bit of pressure build up on him. If he can get a win at Huddersfield, break the away win, Hoodoo. Break the first win since Schumacher left, Hoodoo. And just a vital 3 points against the relegation rival. It's not going to make or break it either way, but my goodness me, it would be an incredibly uplifting, rousing moment for the club. I think if there was ever a game I was desperate for us to win all season, it's that one.
Just very quickly, because I'm mindful that we're 47 minutes in now, and it is getting quite late. And obviously, you know, the gaffer will want us all tucked up in bed, ready for the big game tomorrow, nice and early. So we'll quickly rattle through a couple more talking points. Of course, it's never a dull week being a member of the Green Army. It's never an easy week being a Plymouth Argyle supporter. I'm going to read out Keith Mitchell's question in a minute because it will tie into the second one of these talking points. John, to keep you awake, the news came through, obviously, over the last couple of days that Finn Azaz, his loan, what do you call it? I suppose a loan spell, but I don't know. It's an 18 months. Does it qualify as a spell? His current tenure at Plymouth Argyle has come to an end. He has now joined Middlesbrough on a whopping 4.5-year deal to play for the Wearsiders. I mean, what can you say about Finn Azaz that we probably already haven't said about him, and just your take on the whole situation, obviously, because that will tie into the next question, the speculation linking Luke Cundall with a potential recall to Wolves and a sale for him as well. Poor Ian Foster's going to look around the dressing room and there'll be a couple of empty pegs, unfortunately, at training on Monday.
Yeah, I'm gutted about Finn Azaz. Regular listeners to this podcast / web stream will know that I was probably his number one fan among us, dating back to pretty early days last season, at a time when I don't think there was the unanimity within the Green Army about his qualities that there is now. And I think, thinking back on it, actually, he probably is my favourite player from my time as an Argyle fan that I've ever seen. I'd caveat that slightly. I mean, I know everyone will be screaming Graham Carey at their computer screens. I was living abroad for the kind of best years of the Carey era, so I more remember losing at Wembley and then going down, as much as he was not, you know, to blame for either of those things. But Azaz, I think, you know, just for his role last season, and just the sort of intelligence and maturity with which he played the game. Obviously, some of the goals he scored were just absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, I've never seen a player with us who has so much star quality in a way that is not obvious. You know, he's not a Morgan Whittaker kind of direct, flashy, runny, you know, sort of like scores goals inside the box, except he does these things as well. But you know what I mean? He's not sort of an obvious type of player. And I mean that as no disrespect to Whittaker, who is obviously phenomenal at those things. But he plays with the kind of energy and curiosity of a young player that he is, but with the maturity and sort of game intelligence and vision of someone who is 38, 39, 40. I mean, I sort of followed him a little bit in Newport, but mostly sort of via Football League podcasts and highlight shows, and knew that he'd done very well there in League Two, but didn't really know quite what type of player he was, I guess. And I sort of made some assumptions about him as kind of a young attacking midfielder on loan from a Premier League club as to the sort of player he'd be. And he was, from day one, just so much more than that. You know, just like, he's just an utterly beguiling footballer. I've said on the pod before, I'll say again, I think he has a long Premier League career ahead of him. I really think he is that good. You know, last season he was playing in League One and not necessarily always hugely setting the world alight, although I think an injury had a lot to do with that. But, you know, he's now signed for us at this level, and even I, as probably one of his biggest fans, wouldn't have necessarily predicted just how good he would be. And unfortunately, he was that good, because I think if he hadn't been, he would not be leaving, and we would have had a very good chance of tying him down to a permanent deal here, either now or in the summer. I think even just in the last few weeks, it became clear that he was going to be in a very different kind of conversation to us, in terms of the transfer fee that he was going to go for. I personally think £2.5 million, if that's the reported amount, right, and somewhere in that region, if true, is an absolute bargain. You know, yardstick that I like to get out is that Coventry spent £7 million on Ellis Sims, who has been terrible for them since signing. I don't think Ellis Sims is a terrible player, but I do think £7 million is an enormous amount of money for a player at this level, or it should be. You know,
if you think Philogene was signed for £5 million with a £15 million buyback, and he's been considered a bargain and a smash. Yeah, and Finn's gone for half of that. Sorry to interrupt. Just wanted to...
No. I completely agree. I think that's exactly a good way of measuring it. He's at least as good as Philogene for me, and that's no disrespect to Philogene, who is an outstanding player. So, So I think it became, you know, unfortunately, more and more likely as December went on and his form just improved and improved and improved, culminating in what I'm very sure is the best goal I've ever seen an Argyle player score in my time as a fan, just for the pure technique of it, to give him the trifecta of favourite and best player and best goal. I think it became clear he was going to go somewhere else. So then you think about where there's some where that somewhere else could be. You think of a certain club managed by a former manager who, you know, when they come knocking, you don't say no, apparently. So that was obviously a worry, and that would have been
sickening. I'm not sure Preston could afford him.
Right. You think of, you know, a small club with delusions of grandeur who are currently occupying the second promotion place in the Championship, which is a rumour that I had heard as well. That would have been incredibly galling. So, you know, he's gone somewhere. He's gone to a club I have nothing against, and that's fine, I guess. So, yeah, if it had to be somewhere, glad it wasn't either of those two, which is my petty but sincere opinion of the day. Yeah, and I think just I'll just finish on this, you know, and I think this will hopefully tie into what you're going to ask about Cundall next. You know, I understand why people are despondent about it. I really do. I'm despondent about it from the point of view of having invested a lot emotionally in the bloke. But this is what happens with loan players when you're a club of our size, you know, or a club even bigger than us. I don't think we're a small club. I don't think we should. It's not about doing ourselves down, but it is about being, you know, realistic, looking at budgets, looking at our place in the food chain. But also, if you want to put a more positive spin on it, looking at the way we have chosen to go about our business, which is we have chosen, having nearly gone out of business, to be a sustainable football club that progresses evenly and sustainably and the right way, rather than a club who has an owner who, you know, ploughs good money after bad into the club and you end up in a load of debt and very dependent on that owner, not just pulling the plug. And I know which of those two types of club I would rather be. So, you know, I understand the despondency about it, but I think you just have to be realistic about that aspect of it. And I think also you have to look at, and I see criticism of the club for things like this, which I find baffling because, firstly, he just isn't our player. You know, if in hindsight 2020, if we had an opportunity to sign him in the summer on a permanent, should we have done that? Maybe, but I just have no idea if that was even a conversation or what the amount would have been after we had, you know, already dropped quite a lot on Mumba and Whittaker. And, you know, on a player who also I think has just massively, massively improved beyond all expectations since then. So, you know, him coming in on loan seemed like a reasonable deal at the time. And with that comes this uncertainty that a player could always be recalled. So it's from that point of view, it's just totally beyond the club's resources and legal capabilities in this case to be able to, you know, compel him to stay. But more than that, I think we should see the fact that he is getting recalled and sold on for big money to a bigger club at this level. The fact that that might happen to Cundall as well. The fact that it, you know, almost did happen for Whittaker before he made himself the biggest legend of all time and chose to come back here rather than to a, you know, a pastures richer. It's proof that we are doing the right things. We should see this as a validation, not a diminution, you know, of our status as a club. We are getting these players who have, you know, previously, Cundall obviously did play Championship football before, but maybe previously have only played in Premier League youth teams or League One or League Two, and we are making them into massively saleable assets for big clubs because they come here and they're fucking class and they get a great football education and they play really well and they get slotted into what is a great system of football and that's what, you know, and then they get on the radar of people with more money than us. But then, you know, the challenge is you then have to go and do that again. And is every loan signing going to be that level of success rate? No, it's not. But we've had a phenomenal success rate, way, way, way above what you think the kind of a batting average would be for players coming in on loan. And you just have to keep the faith that we can just find the next Vinicius and we can find the next Cundall and we can find the next Whittaker when he inevitably goes at some point. Like, it's, you know, recent history would strongly suggest that we can do that. And, you know, we should basically, you know, to finish by quoting Dr. Seuss, don't be sad because it's over, but smile because it happened.
I'm just going to do my best Clive Tyldesley now and apologise for any bad language you may have picked up on our sound effects microphones.
The microphone's very close to my mouth, so.
Sam, we won't give this too much time tonight because I'd imagine it will probably be more of a talking point when we're back recording on Sunday night. But obviously the news is breaking now that Wolves seem increasingly more interested in the concept of selling Luke Cundall. Is this, as John said, and as I touched on it yesterday on social media, is this just where we have to remember where we are in the hierarchy of the Championship and what our philosophy is as a club? Or is this a bigger thing that perhaps maybe in future we shouldn't be as reliant on players like this who could be taken at the 11th hour?
Leave me a minute to chime in.
I think that's a very nuanced answer that's needed for that one. For a number of ways. Firstly, I'm not entirely sure that it's all as done as we think it is with Cundall. Neil Dewsnip very much was bullish in the conference earlier today when asked about him, and he said, no, we've had no contact from Wolves. He's going to be in the squad for tomorrow. And that wasn't just like an airy-fairy answer. He seemed quite bullish on that in his wording. So look,
he was
maybe
quite
there's
decisive
a positive
with that answer, wasn't he? And that press conference was done at midday, so he'd already had that conversation presumably before he'd gone out on the training pitch. So
yeah, exactly. So look, I don't know if Cundall's as done as we think it is. Maybe there's a chance that we'll swoop in on a permanent. The only thing that's nagging in my mind about that is the reported fees for Cundall are about 2 million. The reported fees for Azaz are about 2.5. And yes, okay, 2.5 is more than two, but you know, you'd have thought if we are prepared to spend anything like 2 million on Cundall, we'd somehow or other, from some crevice, find the extra half a million for Azaz. Let's be honest, we do have quite a lot of cash reserves in the club, and that's not a caveat. Let's just blow away the cash reserves because nothing can go wrong there. That's not what I'm saying at all. But, you know, if it was an absolute dire case of Azaz is set to be recalled unless you can stump this up, in that scenario, I think we would have used the cash reserves to get Azaz rather than Cundall. And that's no disrespect to Cundall. He's a good player for this level. But Azaz is a great player for this level. And I think if it is true that there was 0.5 of a million discrepancy between Cundall and Azaz, then I find it very hard to think we would buy Cundall but not buy Azaz, personally. If we do end up buying Cundall, then that would suggest to me the disparity between the reported fees is actually far larger than the media says. That would suggest to me it's more like 1 million between them, or maybe even 1.5 between them. So I don't think we will buy Cundall. Or if we do buy Cundall, I think the reports around the fee are not accurate. So Tim's actually, have I learned nothing from past days? And I think, you know, maybe a bit of a tongue-in-cheek question. I think I very much have, because I'm saying that I wouldn't blow the cash reserves in a caveat where I'm saying that if it was the difference between making a signing or not for a small amount of a few hundred thousand, I think the club would do that. I want to make that very clear. I'm not advocating being cavalier with the cash reserves, because apart from anything else, actually, when we went into administration in 2020, it wasn't using cash reserves because we didn't have any cash reserves. We were borrowing. We were borrowing like nobody's business. So look, I think there is a middle ground between absolutely never making any kind of speculative investment and what we did in 2010. Are we maybe a little bit too far the other way at the moment? Possibly. I wouldn't like to say that with any certainty, but I think there would have been a possibility that if Azaz was within our price range, we could have gone for him, I think. So, you know, it's a very long-winded way, and I'm sorry I'm kind of engaging with the comments as I'm talking. It's a very long-winded way of saying, whilst we might sign Cundall on a permanent, I don't think we will. I think it's more a case that Wolves have said, look, Stoke, Bristol City, you offer this or he's staying at Plymouth. And I think if that's the case, he may well end up staying at Argyle. And I hope he does, because he's a good player. Is he quite as good as Azaz? No, he's not. Is he a good player? Yes, he absolutely is. We'll have to see what happens if we do end up signing him on a permanent fee. And yes, I've seen a few comments about the wages are different as well. And yes, that's a fair point. You know what? That's a fair point. Maybe Cundall is about, you know, 2 or 3K a week cheaper than Azaz on wages. So maybe I'm going to look like an idiot, and we will end up signing Cundall and breaking our transfer record. And if that happens, you know what? I trust the club's judgment, but I don't think it will. So we'll see about that one. Hopefully, Luke Cundall stays at Plymouth Argyle for the rest of the season because he is a good player.
And your minute has begun.
Yeah, we've hit your hour, so I'll be very quick. But just if you were to ask people who were the best sort of three players last year, other than Michael Cooper, they're probably going to pick one of the three loan players or the three players we had on loan, Mumba, Whittaker, you know, and Azaz, and he's the one who's kicked on probably, I don't know, Whittaker also. The pair of them have sort of really hit their stride, carried on their upward trajectory. And Mumba, I think, is probably playing at the same level. I think the improvement of the other two is actually to Mumba's detriment. But my point being, we're worried about, people are complaining, oh, we should have kept Azaz, or, you know, it's such a pain. We get these players on loan and then they go, well, would we have got promoted last season? Would we have won the league without the loans? Would we be?
Are you saying we were loan FC?
I think the loans that we brought in complemented the wonderful squad that was here very well, and the squad supported them in their excellence. on the pitch. But, you know, the my point being that we wouldn't necessarily be well in the Championship without the loans, and without Azaz performing as he has thus far this season and getting his move that we all are really gutted about, would we be in the position we are, or would we, with the leaky defence we've got, not producing as many, you know, think about how integral he's been to all our attacking moves, both in the, you know, assisting and finishing, but also in the setup, would we be in the position we are now? So, you know, you have to be grateful for the benefits and accept that that's what we are as a developing club. We develop people, and sometimes we get to keep them, like Whittaker and Mumba. It's brilliant that we've been able to bring them back, and sometimes it doesn't work out that way. You can't begrudge that when we've actually benefited more from their presence. I'd much rather have had the 18 months we've had from Finn Azaz and then him go than to have his loans have not worked out at all, because that would have probably, you know, we might not have got top spot, we might not even got a second spot, and we certainly wouldn't be having the season we are now without him. Like John said, some great memories. So yeah, I think we've got to remember that there's always a bigger fish. You know, I saw a Spurs fan lamenting that Man City took Kyle Walker and now they're eyeing up their best replacement for Kyle Walker since he went. And, you know, and it's this, even for people like Man City, their players want to leave and go to Barcelona. Barcelona have to sell people because of FFP. So, you know, we have to accept that that's the nature of football, and accept and embrace what loan players bring, and that we are an attractive market for both players and clubs to come and develop. So, you know, we trust, we hope at least that, you know, we'll be able to identify the next Azaz and the et cetera, and the next Kundal if he goes, and you know, be able to make the most of them. We've hit with our loans, you know, relatively well, Warrington. I think, you know, not even necessarily his fault that Houghton performed so well and sort of tied up that spot. You know, it might have been that he would do a decent job in that role. It's just Houghton's been exceptional. So we don't seem to have hit badly with our loan identification. So, you know, we might be in 3 months' time having brought a couple of players in who've absolutely blown the roof off of Home Park, be saying, ha, 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 that worked out well, didn't it? So we just got to accept that the loan players, you know, that they fill a role and be grateful for what they bring.
I think just like most Championship referees, Ben, your time management there was awful, but I'll let you off. It wouldn't be a Green and White podcast without me having a dig at referees.
He was actually abiding by the new directives from the start of the season where you have to add on more time at the end.
Right, so he was adding on time. He was adding on time from Sam's hyperbole earlier on in the show. Let's quickly... we are 4 minutes over what we talked about beforehand, but one final question then, because Ian Foster's in the door, and he will be in a nice padded seat in the lower tier of the Mayflower tomorrow, presumably with Uncle Simon. Let's have a look. Keith Mitchell asks our final question of the night. Does he start with a strong team tomorrow and cup tie our players, which may aid in keeping them? I mean, look, it's a good way to look at it, Keith. I'd imagine some of the parent clubs might have a little bit more of a sway on whether or not they want their players cup tied. I don't think we can necessarily, in our position, as some of the comments are coming through with our use of the loan market, I'm not sure we're really in a position where we want to be annoying some of these clubs. Particularly as we have so many Willy Wonka golden tickets to redeem this month. Open forum, whoever wants it. We'll try and keep this brief. Team for Sutton tomorrow preview. Obviously, I think we touched on it briefly on New Year's Day, but is it going to be a mix and mix, do we think? Because let's be fair, the depth isn't great at the moment, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, there's only so much we could rotate, really. Sorry, Ben. I wouldn't be against playing Condor, if nothing else, because the approach that Schumacher used last season when he knew Whittaker was going to be recalled was get as much game action out of him as possible before he is. So it wouldn't bother me starting Condor, unless Villa have actually explicitly told to us, unless Wolves have explicitly told us, don't play him or we will recall him straight away. Unless we've been issued that level of ultimatum, I would absolutely play him. And I think based on Dusik's comments, and I think, let's be clear, I think it will be Dusik who picks the team tomorrow, not Foster. I think we will play Cundall. I think it will be mix and match. I think we'll see Callum Burton get a game. I think we'll see Dan Scar get a game. Might even see Macaulay Gillespie get a game. Goodness knows what's going on with rumours of failed medical. Who knows? I think we'll see Matt Butcher get a game.
Yeah.
If it wasn't Joe Edwards going to game, maybe Mikel Miller, maybe not. And at least one, if not both, of Bundu and Wayne will get a game. Maybe even Ben's favourite, Tyreek Wright, might even get a run out. So
I'd suggest both the Wright brothers might play. And we might see Wayne one half and Bundu the second half to get some fitness back into his legs.
Well, that is
yeah, I'd go with that.
I was going to say, John, can I throw you Freddy Asaka and see what you think of that idea?
Yeah, I mean, he started against Leighton Orient in the Carabao Cup, who are much
very well
than Sutton, and he did very, very well. And I think that he is someone who, obviously, it's very hard to know who's going to be in the new manager's plans in what particular way, I guess, at this point in time. But clearly, Saka is someone that Juzinev is very excited about because he's thrown him into quite a number of game situations over the Christmas period. So it would seem to me that if you are considering him as a player who is going to be a squad option who we can actually bring on in games at championship level, you want to give him all the minutes you can, where he can kind of bed in, get the feel of the team, and playing, you know, on paper, I believe either the worst or the second worst team in the Football League, while we should obviously treat them with the, you know, due respect. But is a good opportunity to do that. I think he's absolutely good enough to play, more than good enough to play against that caliber of opposition. So he is definitely someone that I would start. But yeah, I think Sam's right to say we don't obviously have a ton of rotational capacity in the side, but I think it will be heavily rotated, and rightly so. I mean, the last thing you want is Morgan Whittaker getting an unnecessary injury against Sutton and getting ruled out for the rest of the season, right? It would just be
crazy. To be clear, I don't want Whittaker to be selected at all. I wouldn't mind seeing him on the bench, because I think if he's not in the squad, it'll just social media panic will go berserk. So I think he should probably be on the bench at least, just if only for that reason. But I certainly wouldn't look to bring him on unless we were losing late in the game. And I think even then, I'd have doubts about.
Yeah, I think it's going to be as much of the second tier, you know, team as possible, plus whatever Foster might want to be running an eye over. So there might be a smattering of sort of like your Millers or your, you know, those guys who are, you know, borderline first teamers. But I think it will be Juzinev will play as many sort of those who don't start as he possibly can, with maybe just a few that that Foster wants to run the eye over.
Also, to be very clear, no one is prioritising this season, right? Like, I would hope. Like we need to stay up. And I, for one, you know, there's no disrespect to the FA Cup, which is great competition. Really do not care if we progress or not. Yeah, sure, going out to such a poor team would be humiliating, but we're absolutely battered by Grimsby last season, who ended up having a great cup run, and that result looked less bad than it did at the time. And, you know, it didn't in any way dent our form or confidence. So I agree with Sam's perennial point about winning being a good habit and how you want to win football matches. Obviously, we should go out there and try and win it. And I think even a sort of second string Argyle team should be more than good enough to win that game comfortably. But, you know, I don't think the stakes are particularly high, to be honest.
I think the worst possible outcome for tomorrow is actually a draw. I think the last thing we would want is a replay heading to Sutton.
Objection, Your Honour.
Some of us are on 79 out of 92 Football League grounds. Wouldn't mind making it 81, because I'm doing Huddersfield. That's also a new one. So just there.
Oh, your objection is overruled.
I would love a trip down to Gander Green Lane as well to see
if you want
Vine and the chocolate and amber army.
Rock your tambourine for the chocolate and amber team. Yes.
If there are people in this chat who want to go to Sutton, then feel free on the next international break, but I don't think any of us want to go there midweek evening in a third round replay. Overall,
imagine,
I think
the Clough registered trademark is suing Joe Bell for infringement.
I think we've probably kept people long enough this evening, an hour and 11 minutes. By the time I finish this ending, it will be about an hour and 21 minutes. But I think the big takeaway to take from today and this week's news is that life goes on and time moves forward very quickly in football. Less than a few days ago, we were all pretty, pretty gutted. It was like a punch in the stones that Finnazaz was being recalled after he scored one of simply the best goals any of us have seen for a long time at Home Park. Time has moved quickly, and Ian Foster, even if it is a bit late in the evening, has been appointed as Argyle's new head coach. I think they've all played a very good game within the Argyle media team, hourly tweets of various different levels of baiting to draw us all in. And then just when we thought it was safe to put our feet up and watch the excellent cup tie between Tottenham and Burnley. There they go and they deliver a back post header at 8:30 when we're all caught napping. There we have it. Ian Foster is Argyle's new head coach. I think the one thing that we can take from it all is that this is a really exciting time to be a part of the Green Army. We have now appointed a coach that simply none of us can put a judgment on. We don't know anything about Ian Foster. We don't know how good this could turn out to be, a real coup. Let's hope it does. And I think we can all back the board's judgment on this. If the 100 applicant story is true, then I'm sure there is an extensive range of lists that if we were to just pluck a name off it, we would have given the job to. However, Ian Foster has impressed immensely, it is clear, in the interview process. And as the point was made by Ben earlier, this wasn't just Neil Juznip's decision. This would have been a decision taken by the entire board. Yes, Foster may have links with Juznip, but the casting vote would have come down to Simon Hallett. And if some of the names that have been linked are true, then we cannot only be excited that Ian Foster is our new head coach. And there is only one thing left to do for us as the Green Army. If Ian Foster didn't know already from his time on the touchline as a Portsmouth assistant coach, is for the 15,000 that are inside Home Park tomorrow to make it as boisterous an atmosphere that the FA Cup third round will see all weekend, and show Ian Foster that he has the total, unified, unwavering support of the Green Army, which I'm sure he will have anyway. And look, who knows how the next few months are going to pan out. We all know what the only aim is for Ian Foster. That is survival in the Championship. And then the summer is his. It will be his gift to go out and recruit his side that will take Argyle forward in the future years. So that is it. We've discussed Foster's appointment. We've discussed Azazi's departure. We've discussed the possibility of Cundall. And we've also given you a little snippet of who we think will take on Tim Vine's famous Sutton United tomorrow afternoon at Home Park. Get down there. Give it a warm welcome for Ian Foster. I'm sure he'll be presented to the Home Park faithful at some point. And then I'm sure those of us who are going to be fortunate enough to be at the John Smith Stadium, not many people have been able to say that in recent years, will give him a warm Argyle away following welcome with a 90-minute rousing rendition of Green and White Barmy Army, because it's the only champ we know to get behind the team. John, Sam, Ben, thank you for joining us at the lateness of the hour. Thank you to everyone for your comments. Those that we didn't get to tonight, we will try our best to get some of the more tactical, in-depth ones about his coaches and the system on Sunday's review of the Sutton Cup tie, which will be in your ears and to your eyes on YouTube and all your famous podcast platforms on Monday.
Quickly plug one of our Argyle Live contributors. One team in Devon have done a brilliant, James Stables has put out a brilliant piece on the newsletter. If you're interested in the tactics, that'll probably be on the Argyle Life website as well. Go and check that out if you want to gen up on the more of that sort of stuff.
And of course, now that we're finished, you can stop watching us and you can now go over to Argyle TV and listen to our new head coach. And let's hope he's given a fantastic interview that we can all get behind. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for joining us. As always, keep following, liking, retweeting, subscribing, whatever it is you have to do to get our content. We will be back on Monday. I'm in the hosting chair yet again. Aaron's putting his feet up for the weekend. I'm bringing you the review of the Sutton game. I can't remember who it is I'm joined with. I'm sure it's a collection of these fine gentlemen who are with us now. And then we'll be back with more content throughout the month. My Argyle Life is coming back. I did have a question sent to me the other day about My Argyle Life. There are a few more of them planned and ready to go. Obviously, the last month, as you can understand, has been a little bit hectic as Argyle content creators. So that is all for tonight. We've kept you long enough. Keep it green. Get behind the boys tomorrow. Get behind Ian Foster. Give him a proper Plymouth Argyle Green Army welcome. And the future is very bright. The future is exciting. Long live the king. Cheers, gents.
Thanks, Joe.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.